From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
Hey, Eastern Brady. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to hour number two of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Hello again, Jim.
My hair's still sticking out?
Hair's looking good, Jim.
Okay, fine. So earlier this month, 47 Democrats in the House of Representatives defied a White House veto threat by backing a GOP bill to ramp up screening requirements for Syrian and Iraqi refugees. Congressman Stephen Lynch from Boston was among them. He joins us to talk about the reasoning behind his vote in addition to other congressional matters. Congressman Lynch, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Marjorie.
Good morning, Congressman. Thank you so much for being with us. So let's start with the vote on the Syrian refugees. Why were you with those 47 other Democrats?
Well, it's a very simple bill. I know that it's got subsumed within a larger discussion around immigration policy. But basically, the bill we voted on was a very short bill, four pages in length, basically. And it said that the Director of National Security shall review the vetting process that's being conducted by both the FBI and Department of Homeland Security. And because of the disastrous results we've had so far with the screening process, especially with the Department of Homeland Security, I think it was a very good idea to have another set of eyeballs looking at that process. Back in August, we did an investigation, the Inspector General did, of Department of Homeland Security, and they had 72 individuals who were on the terrorist watch list that were actually working at the Department of Homeland Security. So obviously the director had to resign because of that. And then we went further and did an 8-airport investigation. We had staffers go into 8 different airports to test the Department of Homeland Security screening process at major airports, and they had a 95% failure rate. So we had folks, this was a testing exercise, but folks going in there with, you know, guns on their ankles and other weapons on their persons, and there was a 95% failure rate. So I have very, very low confidence based on empirical data that we've got on Department of Homeland Security. So I think we desperately need another set of eyeballs looking at the vetting process. And that's vetting that's being done, you know, in the latter case at major airports where we have, you know, a stationary person coming through a facility, and we're failing 95% of the time. And I just have even lower confidence that they can conduct the vetting process in places like Amman, Jordan, or Khalees on the Syrian border, or in Cairo, or in Beirut, in any better fashion, especially given the huge volume of applicants that we've had now, you know, seeking refugee status.
We're talking to Steve Lynch, Congressman, obviously, from South Boston. Congressman, though, the criticism, and I share in this, I don't want to say it's somebody else, is that even if you're right that there was a problem that needed fixing, or at least the system needed strengthening, the most likely way that a terrorist would come into this country is not through an 18 to 24 month, even if it's flawed, process, but through this program that allows 20 million people from, what is it, 38 countries to come here every single year with absolutely no prior approval.
Oh, yeah. We've got to do that too, Jim.
My sense was that it was an effort. It was Republican sponsors, but you voted for this too, Congressman. It was essentially a show effort in some ways, because the more serious problem, and I assume you would agree, it's the more serious problem, the more likely entry vehicle was left to another day. No.
No. Listen, we had Democratic and Republican proposals on this bill, and there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between the two of them. And yeah, it became sort of a proxy battle over immigration. You had a bunch of Republican governors that were saying, you know, that were using it politically and saying we're going to stop refugees from coming into our state, which is baloney because they have zero ability under the Constitution to actually prevent refugees from coming into their state. Number one, Number two, you had other people on the far left saying this is going to stop every person from coming into the United States. And in both cases, if they only took the time to read the bill, they would see that it did not do either. And the Democratic proposal also requires a multi-layered vetting process of refugees. And the reason the refugee issue came up and not the visa waiver program is because in the Paris example, you had somebody go into the stream of legitimate refugees and then perpetrate acts of violence upon, you know, the civilians in Paris. That's why that example came to the forefront. And I agree with you. I think that the visa waiver program where you've got, 20 million people coming in versus what you've got coming in, 10,000 perhaps at the end of the day on the refugee program, obviously the visa waiver program is the one that we should be looking at.
Congressman, you mentioned the governors who, I don't know if you used the word grandstanding, but whatever pejorative description you use, because they didn't have the power to do anything. Charlie Baker was one of those governors. He did not sign the letter that Republican governors sent to the president, but he did state that he wanted a pause on the whole refugee thing. Was he grandstanding, in your opinion?
No, I don't think he was. And if you listen to his press conference and when he addressed it, I thought his remarks were very thoughtful, and I thought his remarks were very measured, comparing to what you heard from some of the red state governors, that were doing a lot of chest bumping and that sort of thing. But and I also think that, Governor Baker was asking for more information, which I think was totally appropriate.
Congressman, you just talked about the terrible record of TSA and people getting all these weapons in and contraband in. And here we are, Americans, counting on the TSA to keep us relatively safe while we're flying. You talked about having low confidence in the Department of Homeland Security. So why should we feel as if we have someone looking out for us? I mean, or should we just, is it sort of every man for himself every time you get in an airplane?
No, I think that the resources are being spent. I think there are a bunch of different weaknesses in our system. I think we have very low-paid TSA workers and Department of Homeland Security workers. I think there's a huge turnover there. When you talk to the people at the airport that are actually working there, when Bush created this system, I think it was 700,000 employees. He basically stripped away their right to join a union, and they've tried to use low-wage employees there. There's very little. I heard from a TSA employee last week who's leaving, and he said there's just no room for advancement there. You're stuck. And so I think, morale is part of it, and the whole screening process is being revisited now after the Inspector General's report.
But I guess what I'm saying, if Homeland Security is so inept, but we're depending on Homeland Security for our security, maybe we should be much more scared than we are. You like to think, I think a lot of Americans after Paris were thinking, well, this is horrible, but you learned about how there was no communication between Brussels and Paris, and there was a lot of ineptitude, political ineptitude, and you got like to think, well,
it was an open border, too.
A lot of other situations, but you like to think, for example, that the New York City police, and they're not part of Homeland Security, I understand that, but the cops are on top of things, but maybe there should be some urgency about making sure that the Homeland Security people that are supposed to be keeping us secure are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in that. They told me, we had a hearing maybe 3 weeks ago where the new TSA director said that they're going back to basically going back to the drawing board and beginning again in terms of what their approach is. So that's a good thing. It's a little bit late in coming, but I think because of what's happened in Paris and what happened in Egypt with the airliner, what happened in Beirut, I think it's back on everybody's screen now, and we're redoubling our efforts. But, obviously, I think the system that was initially put in place was inadequate.
Congressman Lynch, one last refugee question. I'm embarrassed to say I don't know if this has happened yet. I know in mid-November I'd read that you were planned to visit a refugee camp. As we know, Ben Carson has visited and said they're really happy there. They'd love to stay there. They have, or whatever other foolishness. Have you gone yet, or are you planning on going?
Yeah, I've gone to a few of them.
And?
And
what are the conditions like?
Well, they vary. they vary. And bear in mind, two-thirds of the refugees in Turkey, for example, which is the biggest host country because of its proximity to Syria, yeah. two-thirds of them are outside of the camps. I visited Adana, which is a big, big camp. I know there might be 100,000 refugees there, which is one of the better constructed ones. But you can see, you know, that there are, I think the vast majority of refugees there are kids and women. And I think that as refugee camps go, it's probably state of the art. They have clinics there and schools, things like that. But it is a refugee camp, and you don't want people living there for extended periods of time, which might be the case given the circumstances in Syria. I think Dr. Carson was right when you ask those people what's Plan A. A lot of them are waiting to go back. They have homes, they have businesses, they have, you know, some of them are professionals. They want to go back. They have their kids are in school there, you know, normally. They want to go back to Syria. But when you ask them what Plan B is, they usually say either Germany. Most of them say Germany, the vast majority, and some say France as well. But to Germany because of the generous health benefits, and also there are long-established communities there in places like Hamburg and Dusseldorf where, Syrian families have lived for years and are well-established and accepted. So, and none of them that I met, said we want to go to the United States, although in a pinch, I'm sure they would take that option.
Why? Because it's so far away from home?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think there are closer communities, more traditional communities where, they would feel more welcome.
Inside, just a breaking news story. In the wake of the release a year after the killing of Laquan McDonald in Chicago, the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who may be in trouble himself, has announced that the chief of police has been fired. That happened about an hour ago. Congressman Lynch, staying on Syria for a second, you know better than we. The Pentagon is now recommending that what was originally 50 special ops forces now be increased in Syria, American special ops forces. Do you support this, and do you worry about the slippery slope potential here?
I do worry about mission creep, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that, we should be in there taking the lead. I think there are plenty of folks in Iraq and Syria who think that the United States ought to go in and fight that war for them, and they're more than willing to let us do that. I think, though, we've got to introduce some level of accountability for people in that area, and it'll be very easy to get in, but it'll be very difficult to get out if we try to make sense of the, 75 different militant groups there that are in sort of the power rankings there, the groups that we've identified, the few groups, are very, very weak. And so if you're going to try to get them to the top of the heap, you've got to eliminate at least 50 groups before you get to that group that we identify as so-called moderate Syrians. So it's a very, very, very murky, very difficult situation there.
You know, one of the things that is amazing to me, Congressman Lynch, is even if one uses the argument, which I know a number of your colleagues do, that the authorization of military force, I hope I have the term correct, that was voted more than a decade ago after 9/11, vis-a-vis Iraq, is still in force and still covers whatever we do. When we're entering a new fray, even if it's only with dozens of special ops forces, if Paul Ryan was on the phone with us right now and we said, why are the people we elected to represent us in the Congress not voting on whether or not we want to engage in yet another war, what would his answer be?
I'm not sure. Maybe you should ask him. I know that I certainly think that the AUMF originally voted on has expired a long time ago. I know it in its language, it identified Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, and you could make the argument that ISIL was once part of Al-Qaeda before they broke off. Now they're sort of in competition, but that's the thread of continuity that they're using to say that this AUMF is relevant. But I think that this long time that has passed you know, justifies a vote on a new authorization. And, you know, I think the president has not brought it forward because I think he feels that there would be significant changes and limitations put on his ability to wage war in this case.
We're talking with Congressman Stephen Lynch. Congressman, as you know, the NSA, the National Security Agency, is no longer collecting these phone records in bulk starting a couple of days ago. This was ordered by this U.S. Freedom Act, which Barack Obama signed back in June. But some Republicans in the Senate, including Marco Rubio, who's running for president, of course, thinks that we should be delaying the NSA bulk records end because of what happened in Paris. What do you think?
I think there are enough. I think the law should stand. I think there are circumstances with the cooperation of the FISA court where if they feel, if the intelligence agencies feel that there's reasonable cause or a substantial cause to conduct a wiretap, they can go right in. They can go right into the FISA court and they can, you know, begin that operation. And it's reviewed by an Article III court, and that's the way I think it should be handled. I don't think that it's productive to just grab all the information. And because it includes so much irrelevant information, and the damage that it also that it causes to the general right of privacy for American citizens is problematic as well.
We're talking to Steve Lynch, a congressman from South Boston. He doesn't just represent Boston. He represents some areas that are under the flight paths to Logan. Did I see you on television threatening to defund the FAA the other day or some such thing?
I put an amendment on the floor. Well, but here's the deal, Jim. They get money for outreach. And so I've been asking the FAA to come to Milton and talk to some of my very angry constituents, and they have flatly refused to do that. I had a meeting with them here in Washington, and they said, okay, we'll come to the meeting in Milton. And then it wasn't 2 hours later that they basically reneged on it and said, we're not going to Milton. So during the FAA Reauthorization Act, I presented an amendment on the floor to strip $25 million from the FAA budget for over outreach because I said there's no outreach being done here. And then, so the Republican chairman and the ranking Democrat agreed with me, and they said, okay, but we want to talk about this and give them an opportunity, them being the FAA, an opportunity to come to Milton and have a meeting with you. So while that was hanging in the balance, the FAA, again, agreed to have a meeting with my neighbors. Just, look, we're just going to talk to them and let them know what it's like to live under a flight path that has 550 planes a day basically traveling over the same houses in Milton and Hull.
Well, hold on, Congressman. Some of these people in the story in the Globe talk about that people were sobbing in desperation on the phone. They couldn't walk their dogs anymore outside because they were too traumatized and the dogs were too traumatized. They scrapped plans to build outdoor decks. They're planning to sell their homes, and they're all on medication so they can sleep.
It's horrible.
It sounds like things are out of control over there.
They are. They've gone to this new, it's called the RNAV Next Gen system.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a tractor beam. Those of you who are Star Wars fans.
Yeah, not
so,
I don't
so
know
the
what
planes
that is.
Come over the same houses over and over and over again. So, which is primarily to save jet fuel.
Right.
Okay. But that means, you know, all those planes are over the same houses, and it's driving those people nuts. And, you know, so we've got to come up with a better plan than this because this is not working. And it's not just Boston. It's, you know, it's all the major airports are converting to the system. So we've got this Quiet Skies Caucus that's been created in response to this system. And it's New York and Chicago and Houston and Dallas and Boston, all the usual suspects. So
we're
pushing back on this. And I think there's a real health effect here.
Oh. I remember. Is a reporter going out and doing stories, not on Milton actually, but on Winthrop, which is close to the flight path too. And you go to these people's houses, and the planes would come over, and all the china, the glasses and the dishes would be shaken. These poor people, like they, you know,
it's too late for me. I live in South Boston. I can actually tell whether they've got the trays in the upright position when they go over
exactly.
My house.
Exactly.
And I'm deaf as a haddock, but for our kids, we're gonna try to straighten it out for them.
Yeah, oh, it's very bad. It's very bad.
Hey, Steve Lynch, before we let you go, we spoke to John King about this earlier this morning, about what might happen in Congress should anything positive happen internationally on the climate change front in Paris. Is the House poised, the Republican leadership in the House, poised to try to undo whatever it is that Obama and another 150 or 60 leaders of countries accomplish, if they do, in Paris?
I'm sure there's a wing of the Republican Party that would like to do exactly that, but I don't think they've got the votes. You know, and I'm guessing at this because I don't know what the proposal would what they'd put up there. But yeah, I think there's that far right group that, you know, the climate change deniers and folks like that would consider it a badge of honor to put something up that would undo that. But I don't think generally that's an affliction that affects all of the Republicans. I think it's a you know, maybe a third.
But Steve Lynch, I always wonder about such things. When you're having a private personal conversation with one of those people who's a denier, to use your term a minute ago, I always want, do they really believe that in the face of all this overwhelming science? Or do they believe that that's what they've got to believe to continue to be elected in their district? I mean,
I think it's the latter. I think it's the latter.
Meaning they know what the reality is.
Yeah,
but
exactly. They know better. They know better, but they score big points if they, you know, especially with some of the media outlets and you know, obviously with a certain segment of the constituency that they have. Yeah, they, you know, they're just pushing back. It's sort of subsumed within the whole idea of political correctness, and they push back on that as often as possible.
You know, before you go away, I mentioned, Steve Lynch, that Rahm Emanuel, let's call him the embattled mayor of Chicago, fired his police chief. When you saw that Laquan McDonald, and you are clearly a supporter of the police, and I mean, obviously, good cops, which is, as we know, the vast majority. When you saw that video of this Van Dyke guy, this cop, who's now been indicted first-degree murder, is now out on bail for $1.5 million. When you saw that, what was your reaction? What did you think?
That was homicide. That was murder. He killed that young man. You know, that's the immediate impression I got, that it was a murder, and you know, there's no question about it, and. They've got larger problems in Chicago. If you look at the statistics there, they've had long-term problems in Chicago. Now, I'm not sure what the root of that is, but they've got to get after it. You know?
I did the math last night. Your fellow Southie resident, Bill Evans, the commissioner, was on Greater Boston with me. And as you probably know, well, any homicide is too much. Last year at this time, we had 50. We have 32 this year. Chicago is four times as big as Boston in terms of population, yet has 14 times as many homicides so far in 2015. One last thing, though, about this. I'm assuming you read the story in the Globe about the number of complaints against at least a dozen Boston. I asked Evans about this last night, too. A dozen police officers in Boston who had more than 20, and they'd been languishing for years for a variety of reasons. The reason I was particularly upset about it is because after that story ran, we learned that Jason Van Dyke, the cop in Chicago, also had a significant number of some resolved, some unresolved civilian complaints against him, not just civilians, some by cops as well. Do you worry that there could be a Jason Van Dyke, despite our best efforts in our own police force and forces, when these kinds of complaints are not cleared up in rapid fashion?
Well, you know, I think the comparison is a favorable one for Boston. You know, they've got 14 times, you know, the number of
homicides.
Incidents.
Yeah.
So I think it may be a deeper, more pernicious problem, and maybe even a cultural problem within the Chicago Police Department. I'm not sure, but it was certainly seemed to be much more widespread. I think that. There's a different culture in Boston among the police. It's not perfect, but I have huge respect and admiration for Bill Evans. The way he handled everything out on the street, you know, starting with you know, the Occupy Boston groups there, going in and sitting with them, and doing the same engagement with you know, members of the Black community leadership there.
Speaking of videos alone, Steve Lynch, the Usama Rahim, who was killed by Boston police, the video was released within a week after it was shown to family and community leaders. 1 week, as opposed to 1 year, after a mayoral election and after a an indictment in Chicago. It's really like night and day.
Right, and I give credit to Mayor Walsh as well. They are a good team, Bill Evans and Mayor Walsh, and I think they've tried to, you know, immediately go out to the affected communities, you know, the victims and you know, especially to the African American community, to the Muslim community, and try to be as transparent as possible, which I think has helped enormously.
Steve Lynch, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate
it, Marjorie. Have a good day now. Bye-bye.
That was the voice of Congressman Stephen Lynch, who is a Democrat representing the state's 8th Congressional District. Coming up, just as the world is on edge about national security, we're going to ask our next guest what we just asked the congressman. The NSA is pulling the plug on its bulk data collecting. Is this a win for civil liberties? The ACLU's Carol Rose joins us for that conversation and much more next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.